It's time, Fort Wayne. Your sports, your station. It's the Sports Rush with Brett Rump. Covering all the topics that hit a nerve here in the Summit City.
Clark, 11-yard touchdown.
Only on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Now, here's your host, Brett Rump.
The greatest, most interesting, most important person of all time.
You are incredible.
Over them, boys.
Yeah, well, you're half right.
What is this, amateur hour?
This is going to be huge.
I believe this is going to be our finest hour.
Just when I think you said the stupidest thing ever, you keep talking.
I think that's the worst thing I've ever heard.
That boy ain't right.
The simplest way to put it, I have problems.
Welcome to the alleged show.
Do you believe in love?
Do you believe in love?
Do you
a Thursday, four down, one to go with this work week. You know why we're pumped up? Because tomorrow, yes, it is released. I know you're sitting on the edge of your seat just waiting for it. Of course, I'm talking about Taylor Swift's upcoming album, The Tortured Poets Department, which is going to be released tomorrow. Adam, your wait will be over.
My wait will continue.
By the way, this just came out that there are certain keywords that have been banned from X amid a rumor that Taylor Swift's upcoming album has been leaked online.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, the worst of the worst.
This is bad.
Oh, it's just major crisis. Somebody get a hold of the FBI. We got to check this out. No, the Taylor Swift album. So, you know, if you got kids, maybe, you know, not every 50-year-old adult male is waiting for Taylor Swift's next album to drop. But if you've got kids, you might want to make sure they know.
What was the title of that album again?
It's called The Tortured Poets Department.
Oh.
Or as Swifties are now referring to it, the TTPD.
TTPD.
Yeah, it's TTPD coming out tomorrow night.
Okay, well. All you Swifties out there,
have
a blast.
I'm sure Swifties already knew. But anyway, this is news, sad news today out of the Fort Wayne Children's Zoo.
Oh, yeah.
Beloved male lion Bahati has succumbed to cancer.
Mm.
The Children's Zoo put out a statement. That says Bahati was diagnosed with cancer last week due to his rapid decline. He was humanely euthanized, surrounded by his care team. It's been a great honor to have cared for Bahati ever since he arrived as an awkward adolescent without a mane through becoming a majestic adult and being able to provide him a dignified, peaceful end.
Why did they have to roast him in his obituary?
He was such an awkward child when we got him. We grew him and matured him into just a big, bold, tough-looking male.
That is sad.
It's always disappointing when some of the...
Yeah, I think they had a giraffe not too long ago pass away.
Yep, not been a good couple of months for the Fort Wayne Children's Zoo. Disappointment, but apparently his predecessor at the zoo also passed away from cancer. But anyway, Bahati joined the Children's Zoo in 2016 from Racine Zoological Gardens. So he's been a part of the Fort Wayne Children's Zoo for about almost 8 years. 46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. Reminder, coming up tonight, we've got Tin Caps Baseball, game 3 of the series against the Dayton Dragons. And the Tin Caps have to get their first win of the series. They'll be at it tonight. Miguel Cienfuegos taking the mound in Dayton. And the Tin Caps last night, man, they did everything they could to win this game. But they also did everything they could to lose it because they only went 3-for-18 with runners in scoring position. Yeah, 3-for-18, RISP.
Oh.
And as a result, left 13 on base, and the Tin Caps end up falling by a run, 3-2.
Man.
And what a great job out of the bullpen by the Tin Caps relief staff after starter Jagger Haynes struggled for a second consecutive start. You got Ruben Galindo, who struggled last year. He was not good when he was pitching for the Tin Caps, but then he went to Lake Elsinore, had an outstanding season. Now he's back at the high A level, and he was terrific. And then he had a couple of relief pitchers that followed him up, and they kind of shut the door and gave the Tin Caps a chance late, but the Tin Caps offense just could not deliver the big hit to get the lead.
Yeah, you mentioned it. After Galindo, it was Ryan Ock and Sam Whiting. Those three combined for, like you mentioned, 6 1/3 scoreless innings, but just too many runners left on base, and just one or two key hits could have won the game for the Caps.
Yep, so they're back at it tonight. 6:45 will be the airtime of the pregame show. 7 o'clock, the first pitch. John Nolan on the call from Dayton, Ohio, with Tin Caps baseball against the Dayton Dragons. Well, it comes up on Sunday. Pacers get their playoffs started, and the Pacers-Bucks series will begin with a 7 o'clock tip on TNT and Valley Sports Indiana, as Chris Denary and Quinn Buckner will have the call. For those of you that prefer the local broadcast, they will be able to broadcast that game. Coming up tomorrow, we'll talk to Chris Denary for a preview of this game. But the one thing we do know is that the Milwaukee Bucks are going to have to start this series without Giannis Antetokounmpo. And they're not looking anything past that. But you've got to be concerned. If he can't go in one, is he going to be ready to go in game two, which is 2 days later, next Tuesday? So you got to feel right now that even if you're Milwaukee, optimistically, you have to consider that your first two home games are probably going to be played without your star. And I think the best hopes for Milwaukee that he's able to get on the court after a couple of days off after that second game, and game three then is not until Friday of next week. And that by that time, Giannis will be healthy enough to go out there. But it's a calf, and you never know with a calf, because they feel better, but then they're still kind of fragile. And it all it takes is one little tweak, and then it becomes a worse injury. So I don't know. What does it mean? Does it change your favorite in this series with or without Antetokounmpo? In other words, do you think Milwaukee wins it with him, doesn't win it without him? How many games is too many games for Milwaukee to be able to win this series? And is it an opportunity the Pacers will take advantage of? Or do you still believe that Milwaukee is going to be the better team and still survive this series, even if they don't have Giannis? 46862 is Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. I'll tell you my thoughts on this, Adam. I don't even think this series is about Giannis and his health. This series is about Tyrese Halliburton and taking that next step, because Halliburton has kind of grown, and we've seen him take the steps and evolve into a star player. Now it's time to go true superstar status, not just making the all-star team and not being a recognizable name across the league, but being a guy that can carry his team and plays his best basketball in the playoffs. And that's what superstars do. I mean, when you talk about a guy like Jokic or LeBron James or, you know, Steph Curry, I mean, you step up, you play your best basketball, and you lead your team to victories, maybe even victories that they shouldn't have, and you lead them to comebacks or whatever it might be. And Tyrese Halliburton, you know where he's from, Wisconsin.
Yep.
And so I say this is the Tyrese Halliburton series. He's played well against Milwaukee so far this year. He's played well in Milwaukee. And it would be great if the Pacers could pick up a win or two in Milwaukee to come home with that lead. And I think if they take the 3-1 by winning their home games, they would be in firm command, especially after winning 4 out of 5 against the Milwaukee Bucks during the regular season. But I think this series is the Tyrese Halliburton series. You're playing the team that's from the state where you grew up, and time to show out.
Yeah, I agree. I think Halliburton's play will be the determining factor, but I do think if the Bucks are without Giannis, I think the Pacers can take that series in 6. Something that's kind of gone under the radar regarding this series and players' health is that Damian Lillard is also not at 100% coming into this series. He didn't practice with the Bucks on Tuesday this week. I'm not sure if he's practiced since then, but he's been dealing with groin and adductor injuries since the end of the season. Lillard said himself that he would likely not be 100% for the rest of the season.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Milwaukee down 1 and maybe even a half.
Yeah.
I think Lillard will go.
I do too.
Just a question of how how much is he, you know, what is he at, 100%, 50%?
We don't know.
We'll find out.
We will.
But then the question becomes, who guards Tyrese Haliburton? And when you look at Milwaukee, remember, the guy that probably would have had the assignment would have been Drew Holiday. They traded him. We talked about it when they traded him to get Lillard, that they were sacrificing a lot of defense, gambling that the offense would be there. But then you lose an offensive player like Giannis, who also, by the way, is one of your best defensive players.
Yeah.
And so I think every advantage goes the Pacers' way. Now they just have to, you know, the door's open. They've got to be able to bust through it.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's really what's happened here. 46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line. Last week, didn't have a chance to talk about this a whole lot, but the Indiana All-Star team was announced that will play Kentucky coming up this summer. Now, the only question is who's going to wear the number one jersey, but Indiana All-Stars were announced. And, man, oh, man, what are they thinking? How could they have the 12 best players from the senior class and not include Javon Lewis? The guy was fantastic. 20-some points per game, averaged like 10 assists. I think he averaged like 6 or 7 rebounds. The guy just did it all for the Wayne Generals, offensively, defensively, made key steals. He was on full display in the semi-state when they won the first game to set up the meeting against Fishers. They beat Mishawaka in the afternoon so they could play Fishers, the number one ranked team at night. And they didn't really get blown out by Fishers. They got beat. Fishers ended up going on to not only win that game, but win the state championship. But I don't know how much a guy has to perform on the big stage. And he's done it. This isn't like a brand new year where he just comes out of nowhere. This is like 2 years of outstanding play by Lewis. There is no way any legitimized All-Star team, when you pick 12 deep, can include 12 players better than Javon Lewis. Can't happen.
No. I mean, he just had an absolutely fantastic season. Set the school scoring record. It's just like, how much more did the guy have to do to even, you know, get some consideration for the roster?
Yeah, it seems totally ridiculous. By the way, this news came down earlier. We talked about this in our first hour, that Maria Marcassano has got the luxury of having a couple of spots open that she can go out and recruit from the transfer portal. And remember, she came into this year with a couple of scholarships open because she didn't fill them a year ago. And when I talked to her about that, she said, we've got our top six players returning. And when you've got your top six players on your roster coming back, it really does kind of squelch the interest that you could get from players in the transfer portal. They think they're coming in to play for the sixth spot on the roster, right? I mean, there's not an open starting spot. They have a six-person rotation that everybody's coming back, everybody's experienced. And so you don't necessarily get the pick of the pick when you have the transfer portal. And so she mentioned that she thought it would be better to keep those scholarships, work the portal, work the freshmen. And we mentioned yesterday that they've made an offer to a player that's not going to be in college until almost the turn of the decade in 2029, 2030.
Yeah.
But today, big pickup. Now, I'd heard about this young lady had visited campus. A little birdie told me about the visit on campus, and I knew that so I looked her up, and she had played at Western Michigan, had gone on to Michigan State, and she had made a visit like a week or so ago. She is a 5'10 junior out of Muskegon that averaged 22 points per game at Western Michigan. Not only did she average 22 points a game, but she shot 84% at the free throw line. She shot 47% from the field. She shot over 34% from three. Just a terrific player. And exactly what Maria Marcassano likes, the length at guard, you know, a tall guard.
Yeah.
5'10 guard. And she's listed as kind of a guard forward type, so she's more a 3 to a small 4 or a stretch 4, but big pickup.
Absolutely. I think that some veteran scoring with some experience not only at Western Kentucky, but now just some experience in the Big Ten too, ready to come back to the Horizon League and tear it up, hopefully.
Yep. 46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line 46862. Eric Dutkiewicz from Parkview Sports Medicine is going to be joining us in about 12 minutes from now. And we've got to get the reveal of the Boys Basketball Player of the Year and the Girls Basketball Player of the Year right here on the show. And Eric Dutkiewicz is going to drop it on us. It's just like a Taylor Swift album. We're going to get it dropped on us. No leaks online.
No, I don't think he leaked his picks online.
Yeah,
so
we didn't have to like filter any keywords to make sure that the album didn't get leaked early. Adam, I know it's driving you crazy having to wait for the official release. But
oh, man.
It's coming, brother. It's coming.
I'm chomping at the bits.
Let's talk some Notre Dame football. They've got their spring game coming up and some questions about the Irish that we want answered. And so we're going to the source from Fighting Irish Preview and FightingIrishPreview.com. It's the judge, Phil Houck. How are you, sir?
Brett, it's great to talk to you. I'm doing good because it's football season, but it's always football season. You know, the NFL draft next week. Since early in March, I've been covering Notre Dame football almost on a daily basis again. And we got a spring game coming up this weekend. And I'll tell you what, last Saturday, the Notre Dame media got a real treat because for the first time in years, we were invited into to a live scrimmage that the Irish had in the stadium, which is where they actually probably played a little more real football than in a way they're going to play this weekend. So, it's Notre Dame football season all year around, and this is a big week.
Well, the great thing about having Notre Dame football for the judge is it also keeps him feeling 22 as we continue with our Taylor Swift theme today. Judge,
I have missed out on Taylor Swift. I feel so, I'm a trendy guy. I try to stay up with the times, but one of these days I'm going to sit down and start to listen, I guess. So let's go.
You know, for 6 months last year, all we heard was the Eras Tour and Taylor Swift. Now it's all about Caitlin Clark and the great Iowa star that's now part of the Indiana Fever. All right, we got to talk quarterback now at Notre Dame. Because let's start with Riley Leonard, the transfer, and it sounds like maybe a little bit of an injury concern. How concerned should Irish fans be?
Well, I think, he's still the guy, and he's in pretty good shape right now. He could probably play right now. Last week at that scrimmage, he didn't go in the live reps, but he was mimicking every play. He was making the moves. He threw the football beforehand. His procedure, as I understand it, really went back to something that had from the injury that he incurred in the game against Notre Dame last season. And this was just a procedure to clean something up, and he's moving really well right now. He's going to be fine.
Of course, Sam Hartman in that moment went over to check on him after he had gone to the tent and been injured. But let's talk about these two quarterbacks and how Notre Dame might have to adjust or look slightly different with Riley Leonard. How will it change the Irish offense?
Well, right. I think by all measures, many measures that we've seen, not his experience, but Riley Leonard's more of a physical specimen and probably has a better arm and runs the ball better than Sam Hartman. So that's kind of tailor-made for what I think Mike Denbrock, the new offensive coordinator, wants to do. It's what he did at LSU with a guy who could run and throw, and that's what they see in Riley Leonard with those abilities. He's shown that ability to not just scramble, but to run that RPO around the ends and make good decisions, and also to break into the open field. So I think you're going to see a quarterback that runs the football more than Sam Hartman did last year, and probably throw the ball a little deeper better.
So the competition at quarterback might be for the backup spot. Is that what you're saying? You think it's Riley Leonard as QB1, and then you got guys like C.J. Carr and Steve Angeli. Is that where there's competition, or has somebody separated themselves?
Well, and then there's and don't forget Kenny Minchie. The nice thing that has been going on in the Notre Dame quarterback room this spring is that there are four guys who are really good. and could play, and you'd feel comfortable saying, yeah, I think that guy's a big-time college quarterback, any one of those four guys. C.J. Carr, in the scrimmage that we saw last week, brought audible gasps from the media with some of the throws that he made. This kid's a, you know, he's a high school senior still. You know, the early entry freshman, he looks outstanding. He's going to be a real good, of course, a five-star prospect, one of the best prospects in the country, and he's the real deal. But Steve Angeli, you know, outstanding play in the Sun Bowl in his one start last season. He was, he was 13 for 18, threw three touchdown passes, 280 yards, something like that. He can play. And they like Kenny Minchie as well. Kenny Minchie is a strong-armed guy who gives you a little bit of more running ability, perhaps. You know, the downside of all this in this day and age, you know what's going to come next is after this spring, look out transfer portal. One or two of those guys, I can almost be certain, is going to be gone. And it'll come between Angeli and Minchie. C.J. Carr, of course, will, you know, he's still a freshman. He's not going to transfer anywhere. But I would not be surprised if Angeli or Minchie, one or both, transfer.
What is the situation with the offensive line for Notre Dame?
Well, you got to replace Joe Ault. He's going to go in the top 10 to the NFL next week, and Blake Fisher also is NFL bound. So you got two tackles to replace, and so Joe Rudolph, the offensive line coach, has his work cut out for him. Neither of those guys played in the Sun Bowl last year, and Notre Dame filled in for them pretty well. So there's talent in the pipeline, but with the real situation is this, is that any offensive line takes time to gel. And so right now it's a work in progress. There's talented players at those positions. They should be good. Will they be good at the start of the next season? It'll be a work in progress, but they should be outstanding.
Well, another work in progress might be at wideout. What do the Irish have as far as targets for Leonard or whoever might be throwing?
Well, you know, this has been a big, huge area of concern, obviously, for 2 years. The last 2 years, Notre Dame did not recruit well at the wide receiver position going into 2022. For a couple of years prior to that. The last two classes have been really good. They lost in the transfer portal after the season. It looked like a disaster. Rico Flores, Braylon James, Tobias Merriweather, all go into the portal. Chris Tyree declared for the NFL. Matt Salerno graduates, and you go, well, there's half of your receiver room. But the Irish have brought in three outstanding transfers. In Bo Collins from Clemson, Jaden Harrison from Marshall, Chris Mitchell from Florida International, and also a couple of good freshmen, Micah Gilbert, Cam Williams, are back or are in, and both of them flashed in that scrimmage we saw last week. Both of them looked like they could contribute early on, but probably the best and most consistent target in that room is going to be Jaden Greathouse, a sophomore. Just really, he played well last season, and he looked great in the scrimmage last week, and all spring he's been the guy. So there's plenty of talent in that receiver room, and I think it's going to be the best receiver room Notre Dame has had for several years.
Notre Dame's going to have some holes to fill defensively, too. What do the Irish look like on the defensive side?
Well, it everything is good on the defensive side. The holes, if there are any, are going to be mainly at the linebacker position, where you lose J.D. Bertrand and Maris Liafau.
Couple good players, Judge.
Really good players. But the defensive line is solid. You've got Xavier Watts back. You've got Ben Morrison back in the secondary. Xavier Watts, the Nagurski Award winner as a defensive player of the year in college football. The defensive line there, Notre Dame was really helped when Riley Mills and Howard Cross, defensive tackles who've got just a gazillion starts between them and have been very effective, are back. And so how do you restock that linebacker core? Well, Jack Kaiser's going to see a lot more snaps. He was the third leading tackler on the team last year. even though he had half the snaps that J.D. Bertrand had. So he's a very efficient player. He's going to, is expected to be outstanding. But, you know, sophomores Drake Bowen from, he's from Maryville, I think. He's an Indiana kid. He's got to step up, and hopes are high for him. Redshirt junior Jalen Sneed, who was a five-star recruit a couple of years ago, has been making a lot of noise this spring as well, and they're going to be counting on him as well. So, you know, there's talent there, but there are a couple of holes at that linebacker position that the Irish have to fill.
What's the pressure as far as when you look at Marcus Freeman? Is there pressure to maybe take it a step up?
Yeah, you know, I'm ready for this question. It's a great question. In year three, yeah, of course there's pressure. There's always pressure at Notre Dame. But in year three, Lou Holtz won a national title. Dan Devine won a national title. Arrow Parsegian won a national title in year three. Brian Kelly got Notre Dame to the national championship game in 2012. That was his third season. Third seasons for any college coach at a big-time program can be very pivotal. Charlie Wise, not so good in his third season. Tyrone Willingham, not so good. Bob Davey, not so good.
They were still pivotal.
And they were, sure were. They sure were. But those other coaches, national titles. So the expectations are always through the roof at Notre Dame. You know, there was marginal improvement from 9-4 to 10-3 last year. I thought that 10-3 record was a bit disappointing. I thought, you know, 11-2 easily. You know, you go back to that Ohio State game, and it's still, that will stick in Notre Dame fans' craws forever. So maybe 11-2 would have been a little more in line with what that team should have done that season. But the schedule stacks up pretty good this year. It's not as tough as last year. High expectations in South Bend, and early preseason prognostications, almost without exception, have Notre Dame knocking on the door of the top five. So there are high expectations for this team.
Where's the best place to find your coverage of the Notre Dame spring game?
FightingIrishPreview.com. There's a preview up there right now about a lot of the things we just talked about. There's also a piece I put up this week about the history of the spring game at Notre Dame. And we're going to have all kinds of coverage this week. Great photography, exclusive photography to Fighting Irish Preview. And I'll be there covering the game. And I'll also have some videos up there. So you can look me up on YouTube. And we also link those videos on FightingIrishPreview.com. So appreciate being on with you anytime, Brett. Thanks.
You're our own little leprechaun right here on the show, Judge.
I don't know how I feel about that, but nonetheless, I will take that in the spirit intended. And thanks again, Brett, for having me on. I love it.
Have a great week and enjoy it, Judge. Appreciate you.
You too. Thanks
that
again.
Is Judge Phil Hauck joining us here on the Sports Rush. We got to take a time out because coming up on the other side, it's time to find out who does Eric Dutkevich have as our boys and girls high school players of the year. He'll give us those, plus we'll talk some other stuff, including NCAA and the courts, how they're impacting the power or powerless NCAA right now, including a story that we got regarding Notre Dame. It's all coming up with the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Amanda Krestovich reporting that a complaint has been filed against Notre Dame with the National Labor Relations Board. The same unfair labor practice charge that we've been hearing about at other universities. There's several other existing NLRB cases. Of course, we're talking about one that's filed against Northwestern, another one against the entire Ivy League. And basically, at the basis of this is that there are some that want athletes at college to be labeled as employees and not as student athletes. And that's what they're trying to get, is basically that the courts will proclaim that these are employees, which will give them certain rights, benefits, etc. And then they can unionize and all hell breaks loose. All right, let's talk to our next guest. He's joining us on our Sports Rush guest line like he does each and every week from Parkview Sports Medicine. It's Eric Dutkevich. Dut, how are you on this Thursday?
Good afternoon, Brett. I'm doing fine. Just hanging out here and getting ready to the fourth day of the week down. one to go. We got Friday, and looking forward to the weekend.
Yeah, and dude, I don't want you to miss it. Taylor Swift drops her new album tomorrow, so do not miss it.
Oh, I will make sure I'm up and ready, and you know,
ready for that download.
All the little Easter eggs that she has been putting out.
Yes, absolutely. All right, so yesterday we found out that the NCAA has waived the transfer rule, that on the second transfer you had to sit out a year. They've now waived that, so you can transfer anytime you want, as often as you want. They've really opened up that window because the courts have kind of forced their hand. We know NIL is a product of a lawsuit that opened the door to being able to provide some type of pay for compensation on name, image, likeness. And now we're hearing about complaints being filed with the NLRB, with universities across the country trying to claim unfair labor practice and try to get student athletes basically identified as employees. It just seems to me that the court system is almost rendering the NCAA powerless at this point.
Yeah, I see what you mean. I think a lot of it, I mean, it all goes back to money. I mean, it really does. And realistically, when you look at the NCAA for so many years, it was about keeping amateur sports amateur. Athletes shouldn't get paid. They can't, you know, make money off their name, image, and likeness. We saw the Ed O'Bannon case for years and years and years go through the courts there as well. And I think the NCAA is coming to a conclusion, I think, that the money train has left the station and you better jump on. And so I think they are trying to, in so many ways, stay with it. Now, the other side of that is, because it involves money, the government is going to want their hand in it too. And that's where you see a lot of these state legislatures and state attorney generals and other places, other local governments, trying to be part of it and advocate for the athlete, because they realize if Ohio State football players are suddenly considered state employees, that's huge for the state of Ohio and getting taxes and all the other stuff that goes along with it. And not just the benefits for the athletes, but really the benefits that go towards the state, really what it amounts to. So it is that power struggle continues to be, and I think this is just the reiteration of it. As far as the courts, a lot of times it's just, you know, getting in there, filing a preliminary injunction, which means all that does is stops and says, okay, until we actually decide this, we're going to put a halt to everything and let these kids do this. And I think, yeah, I mean, basically it kind of forces the hand of the NCAA in this case and to change their rules. And, you know, for a while the NCAA was slow to do that, but I seem like anymore they're more reticent to do it, and thus we've seen this transfer rule now change yesterday.
Well, one of the things too, when we talk about this labor situation, here's something to think about, dude, because you brought it up briefly with just saying taxes. That's one part of it. But imagine this, that all of those players, if they are determined to be employees, they will be employees of the university for which they're participating in sports, which would make them a state employee, which means their pay will be public knowledge, right?
Yep.
You can't hide it. And so whatever Right. they're getting in NIL funding is going to be right out there for the world to see, too.
Absolutely. I mean, that's a big part of it. And realistically, I mean, you look at the numbers that we see with college coaching changes and Calipari going to Arkansas and, Kentucky getting their new coach and all of that. A lot of these athletic departments, especially the big Power Five schools, are self-funded, self-sustained athletic departments. So, yes, I mean, they're part of universities. There might be some funding in there, you know, but, you know, Purdue University as a whole is not paying Matt Painter $3 million a year coming out of the tax money. It's coming out of donors of the self-funded Purdue athletic department, and same with IU and Notre Dame. And when you start to get below that like a Ball State, it may be a little bit more mixed. And then you got a place like Indiana State that can, you know, really the school is operating the athletic department. And so it's the rules changed there, because I think they had to post the basketball coach's job for 2 weeks on the job board before they could announce that Matt Graves is the new coach there, I think the way it was explained to me. So I think that's, you know, there's so many different levels to it. And this is, you know, college sports is a big money enterprise and continues to become bigger. And everybody wants a chunk of the change. And I think that's where, you know, the NCAA tried to hold off for as long as it could. And, you know, with the novelty and the pure amateurism of it. And, I mean, think of Michigan and the Fab Five, the way they were dinged, you know, 35 years ago. I mean, in today's game, what they did, that would have been nothing. So it just, you know, it's kind of a interesting way things have panned out. But, and on top of it, the COVID year, just adding that 6 year in there, where kids can stay another year and the transfer rules. And realistically, with the NIL stuff, if a kid wants to transfer, but you have that transfer rule and they're not going to come to your school or your state school, then, you know, that's putting up a blocker for some opportunity there. And so I think that's where you see a lot of the government and high-ranking officials and people in real power, so to speak, get involved.
Well, then another thing to think about, we don't have time to discuss, but, you know, there's another aspect to this where if the universities then find, or if the laws determine that they are employees and they have to be paid, then all of those collectives that are getting money for NIL, yep, that might be money the university isn't going to want so they can pay their players. It's just, there's too many cans of worms that have been opened up and all chaos has broken out. We'll just see where it all settles. But it really concerns me about organizationally college sports as a whole, because when you don't have somebody to really police it and do what's fair for everybody, then the power mongers kind of take over, and we're seeing that, I think, across the board. All right, we got to get to it, Duke. It's time for you to let us know, as far as this past high school basketball season, who you have selected and why as our high school boys and girls players of the year. Let's go ahead and talk and reveal, who do you have as our girls high school player of the year for this season?
Our 2023-24 Girls High School Basketball Player of the Year, Jordan Poole from Snyder High School. You know, what a great season, great career for Jordan. You know, an Indiana All-Star. She was a junior All-Star a year ago. She's a senior All-Star this year, going to be part of that All-Star series with Indiana and Kentucky. A finalist for Miss Basketball, came out kind of after the fact as a footnote. She actually finished second in Miss Basketball voting. So huge congrats to her. What she was able to do at Snyder to get the SAC championship in her senior year, to take them back to regionals, and just an awesome career for her. 16.9 points a game, 44% shooting, just under 1,400 career points. Of course, she's going to Purdue University next year to play for the Boilermakers and Katie Gerald's, and just a wonderful career for her. Fantastic player and a PSM edge athlete, so really gotten to know her over the past couple years, and certainly wish the best for her, but a dynamic player, to say the least, and so she, yep, gets the girls' player of the year.
Yep, I think I'm not going to claim any bias. PSM edge athlete and going to Purdue, which certainly may have... gotten an extra vote from Duke. All right,
and the Snyder girl.
Yeah, really. She's got the trifecta going for her.
Okay.
All right, let's talk about boys. The high school basketball player of the year on the boys' side.
Yes, we find from Wayne High School, Javon Lewis Jr. You know, what a great kid. A great story for him. A kid who, you know, had a tough childhood, lost his father when he was young, a kid who found basketball, didn't even make the Blackhawk middle school team in sixth grade and seventh grade. It was in eighth grade that he finally did, and boy, isn't that great. And now he went on to Wayne High School, was, you know, great player for them, all SAC. My pick for player of the year a year ago as well, just 2 years in a row, they go back to semi-state, come up a little bit short, but a great career for him. Another kid who has, you know, really worked hard. He's smaller, and so as a guard who's smaller, had to really put in his time and worked his craft, and wound up averaging 19.4 points per game, 7.6 assists and 2.3 steals. Wayne, a resurgence for this group. Good to see that he's been able to do it and what he's been able to do. And they're getting another edge athlete, so he gets in there and not just the basketball training, but the performance training that goes along with it is really made him a great basketball player. And I'm really expecting big things. Missed out on the Indiana All-Stars. I think that was a
snub.
Big miss. But, he gets my pick for player of the year in the area.
All right, dude, I've got like 10 seconds, but yeah. I do have to ask you, Sunday, WWE, Sunday Steiner coming to the Coliseum. Are you indoors or outdoors?
Well, I will be outdoors to start for sure because that's when all the wrestlers come in about 2 hours ahead of time. So go on out and see them. Cody Rhodes, now part of the SmackDown roster officially. That's the group that's coming to town. We may see the new undisputed WWE Universal Champion at the Allen County War Memorial Coliseum.
What else?
No promises. Cards subject to change. Don't quote me on it.
What else is happening with Parkview Sports Medicine? I know baseball's coming up. That's part of it.
Yeah, we have our PSM baseball series coming up May 2nd, May 6th, and May 7th, and May 9th. There's four dates this year in May. We're going to have games out at Parkview Field, Leo, Northrop, Northside, Snyder, Columbia City, Carroll, Homestead, some teams that are not PSM schools having the opportunity to do as well. Always look forward to it, working with the Tin Caps to put that on. That full schedule you can find at parkviewfield.com and tincaps.com. Looking forward to it. Hopefully the weather is great in a couple of weeks.
Always enjoy having you, dude. Have a great week. We'll be talking to you in a couple of weeks. I think we've actually got Tommy as a guest host next week.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, so we're going to have him in here and kind of go back, give some old memories and talk a little more about everything that Parkview Sports Medicine has under its umbrella. And some of the great people that work with you and under you, around you, I don't know, whatever it might be. But, we're looking forward to that next week as well. So have a great week or two, and we'll talk to you again.
All right, we'll catch you then.
Yep,
thanks,
Brett. That's Eric Dutkevis joining us here on the guest line. We'll take a quick break. Got to wrap it up on the other side. It's the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. I know some of you might have been concerned about Caitlin Clark and her ability to make the kind of money that she walked away from at Iowa. Well, you can rest easy because multiple reports are saying that she is nearing a lucrative 8-figure endorsement deal with Nike, which will include getting her own signature shoe. It's already caused some outrage and some negative comments from around the WNBA asking the question, what about us? We're the stars of this league. Where's our shoe deal? She did. Those players, by the way, didn't bring 15 to 20 million eyeballs to the television set. Big Thursday show, and a big thanks to those that made it happen. Destin Adams from A to Z Sports. The judge, Phil Hauk, who joined us to talk about the Notre Dame spring game that comes up on Saturday. And, of course, from Parkview Sports Medicine, Eric Dutkevich. Tin Caps baseball tonight, some roster moves. John Nolan will tell you about it on the pregame show at 6:45. This has been the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.